When your child's chaotic behaviors are running your life, when you're struggling to find practical solutions, and just when you feel you've reached the end of your rope, there comes Harmonious Clan Podcast, equipping you with the proven practical strategies we've developed over the years through our own experiences to bring you strategies that give you results, enabling you to nurture your child from outcast to outstanding, and your clan from chaos to harmony. Welcome to Harmonious Clan Podcast. This is our series, Is This Behavior Really Out of the Blue? This series includes three episodes that will help you understand if behaviors are really out of the blue. In episode one, we'll introduce out-of-the-blue behaviors with a story from our own life. We'll show you that those behaviors are not really out of the blue, and we'll introduce the ABCs of behavior. In episode two, we'll discuss more about the ABCs of behavior, how you can use the ABCs to help modify your child's behavior patterns by helping them build the skills they need in these situations, and by understanding the antecedent events that trigger the undesirable behaviors. And in episode three, we'll discuss the path from chaos to harmony. We'll contrast the chaotic path, being reactive to the behavior, versus the harmonious path, identifying antecedents and being proactive. Make sure to listen to all three episodes to learn the strategies that will bring your clan from chaos to harmony. Visit our website at www.harmoniousclan.com to get a copy of our podcast download, Understanding and Working with Behaviors Before They Start. Harmonious Clan equips you with our books, educational podcasts, a supportive community, courses, speaking events, and one-on-one consulting, enabling you to nurture your child from outcast to outstanding, and your clan from chaos to harmony. Welcome to Harmonious Clan Podcast. I'm Marco.
I'm Louisa.
And we are in our series, Is This Behavior Really Out of the Blue?
The answer is no.
No. But okay, we're in episode two today, where we're going to talk about our solution to the problem that we brought up in episode one, and talk about what the outcome was with that strategy that we applied and why it works. So just to recap from episode one, was a situation where our son is at his weekly event, and he hit a child in the class. And we got the report of this, the teacher, when we went to go pick him up, saying, oh, your son did this, and it was totally out of the blue. Everything was fine, and all of a sudden, he hit this child. And we talked about in the last episode a little bit about it is not really out of the blue, and we talked about the ABCs of behavior, the antecedent, the behavior, and the consequence. Talked a little bit about the antecedents, and these are the precursors or things that may be going on in the environment or with other children around your child that are triggers to the behavior that you saw, whether he punched somebody or he yelled and screamed or he didn't want to do something or he did something completely different or wrote on a wall or something that he shouldn't have done. We talked a little bit about that in the last episode. In this episode, we're going to get more detail about these antecedents and also our solution to that particular story and what the outcome was.
Yeah, so going back to last time when we talked about the antecedent. So what was really happening? Out of the blue, he just punched him. What was really happening? Let's look at some of the unmet needs. There were definitely environmental stimuli that was beyond what his system could handle. In our book and in the last episode, we talked about children who are the sensitive high needs children, they often have sensory processing disorders. That means things that are okay for you, noises and bright lights or any of the seven senses that you can block out. For these children, they cannot block out. So it all ends up being way too stimulating, it's either overstimulating or understimulating. So those are some of the unmet needs.
So why wouldn't all children have the same issue?
Well, because they do not have a compromised central sensory processing system. Hmm. When your sensory system is compromised, you are not able to modulate yourself. You're not able to modulate the input.
So a child who isn't a sensitive high need child would be in the same environment as a sensitive high need child, where this child who doesn't have these sensitive needs will be in that environment but be able to function normally.
Yes.
Because his system can handle it and
his system is doing
filter things out, and the sensitive high need child can't, right?
His system is doing all of the filtering for him. The sensitive high needs child, no, his system is not doing any of the filtering for him. So a bus drives by and it's outside, doesn't matter. He gets overwhelmed, or he gets at least distracted because he noticed it and he can't block it out. Or bright light or texture of the room. I mean, before I understood this, you know, I heard children that would go from one room into another room and immediately would just freak out and start melting down. Okay, so what's happening there?
That seems odd.
Well, yeah, okay, so it sounds like out of the blue, but no, the room that he walked out of had a smoother texture on the wall. The room that he walked in had a different paint and it had a tighter popcorn texture. And all of a sudden, no, that's not okay. Visually, too stimulating. Textile-wise, he couldn't handle it. I mean, in the extreme case, there are children that would throw up the minute they get that kind of stimuli that just doesn't sit with their body.
It overloads them, basically.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
So it's good to know these things. I mean, from the different senses, each of those can have a processing issue that they may have one sense that has a sensitivity and one that doesn't, but those ones that do can cause these kind of issues, right? They're gonna get overloaded from a particular stimuli that you may not even think about, because to you, going from the living room to the hallway is not a big deal, but to them, if they have this texture or visual processing issue, they would notice it, right?
Yes,
and it may be too much for their system to handle.
Right. Going back to our example of, okay, so where he just out of the blue punched a child. Yes, there was environmental stimuli. So at the time, they were at a cafe with a bunch of kids in a cafe waiting to order and get their food. That's trouble to me the minute I hear it. Because one, definitely too many kids close. They're in close proximity. And he's not a child who has an easy sense of personal space. No, his personal space is that much bigger than other children. So packed in a cafe with a bunch of kids there waiting for their food, no, I'm pretty sure many of the kids were just way too close to him.
Well, the other thing is that he's idle, right?
He's idle? That's another? Oh, so that's another skill that he lacks. He does not know what to do with himself when he has downtime. You know, that's one of the skills that he lacked at the time, and we're working on it. Yes, idle is not good. When kids are just waiting, it's a culprit to trouble.
Well, especially with sensitive high-need children, they like to have a sense of knowing what's happening, how long it's going to be, what's coming next, right? So if you put them in a situation where they're waiting in the room to order ice cream and they're just there and you don't tell them, well, go do this or go sit there or go do that, and they're just there by themselves.
Waiting
yeah,
endlessly.
It's another one of those things that can just trigger a behavior that you don't want.
Exactly. I've also, after conversation with the people who were around, then I realized, well, there was actually one particular child who was high energy. I mean, that child was in front of our son and was waving and making faces and waving his hands up and down right in front of...
Doing kid things.
Doing kid things. I mean, yes, he was just being a kid. I mean, another 7-year-old, who knows how many year old child, and that's how they are, right? But no, that's not okay. To a sensitive high needs child, no, that's not okay. You're in my space. You're too close. Your hand is waving in front of me and I cannot handle that motion. None of this is okay for a sensitive high needs child. So,
well, especially if they haven't been taught the skills they need to handle that situation,
right,
and maybe speak up for themselves. And if they can't, they just get more and more frustrated, and then boom, something happens, right?
Right, exactly.
He may push the child out of the way or do something that is not
well,
you know,
in
that's
that situation, the minute they walked into the cafe, I wasn't there, but I can just about imagine, the minute they walked into the cafe, that was probably not okay already. Loud sounds, you're changing from the outside into the inside, shut door, whatever light there was, all the children, and then waiting idly, no, that's a problem, and then everybody's kind of really, really close in line trying to wait.
A lot of people talking, air conditioner running.
Yes, and then, a monkey in front of him waving up and down. No, I can see him punching him. I can see him. I mean, he just got built up to a point where he doesn't know what to do. Lack of skills to talk about it. Can I please step outside for a minute? Is there something for me to do? I'm not sure what to do with myself. What can I do? All of those are pivotal skills that are lacking. We need to build on those skills, and we need to give them a lot of exposure to practice. I'm not saying to bubble them and make sure they're never exposed to situations they cannot handle. That is absolutely not what we're about. But what I'm saying is you need to modulate how much you expose to them, and you need to give them the support. If you're going to expose them to that kind of situation where you know he can't handle being idle, he can't handle the noise, you need to send him, I mean, don't send a child to war without anything. Come on, at least give him a sword, give him a shield, give him face mask, give him something.
Yeah, you have to give him the tools, and whether he gets that from role playing with him or whatever, they need to learn those skills. And the only way to really learn those skills, again, is to analyze what's going on in these environments and understand these antecedent events and be able to identify those, because once you do, you can teach him what he needs to know to handle it himself. And also you can go in and try to modify some of those things that you can modify, right?
I mean,
like we talked about last episode, the earplugs, for example, for someone who has auditory issues, right? That could make a big difference because it just brings everything down to a level where, okay, his system can process it a little bit better and can eliminate some of these antecedent triggers.
Yeah, we have earplugs every time we go to Costco or every time we go to any store. We can't go to any store without earplugs. I don't know whatever it is that he's hearing and not filtering that we don't even know about. But going to the outcome and why does it work? So basically, our solution is to study the antecedents to find out what in the environment is not right. You can alter it. You can provide accommodations for that.
And you can build the right skills for your child to be able to handle those and, you know, get through those situations without having an inappropriate behavior.
Right. So the outcome is that your child now, with the proper support and with the right set of skills, now your child is able to walk out and attend these events. Now he's capable of navigating himself through these situations. Why does it work? Because if you catch the antecedent, you catch it in the antecedent stage, then it never manifests itself as a behavior. So we catch it in the antecedent stage. When we take him to these situations, we give him earplugs. And we also ahead of time find out what's going to happen. You know, we draw a visual schedule about, okay, so first you're going to do a craft, then you have an art, then we use social stories. We talk about social stories in our book on how you do that to prepare a child or teach children about certain situations.
So what exactly are social stories? How do they work?
Well, social stories are little, for us, I make very little books that you read to the child and it teaches them about a certain situation. I can make a social story in this example, knowing that my son lacks the skill to tell kids who are too close to them to back up. So I make a social story and, you know, page one says when children get sometimes people get close to you and they don't know that you don't like it. Page two, when people get too close to you and you're uncomfortable, you can tell them, could you please move away from me? Or you can back up. Page three, you can always talk to people when they're doing something you don't like. You know, just as an example. So it's a story that teaches them a moral. And the moral here is, you can always talk to people when they're doing something that you're uncomfortable with.
So the social stories are part of building these incremental skills so that they can survive and exist in these situations because, again, we're advocating for these children. You don't want to bubble them. No. You don't want to keep them at home because that was our first reaction, right, early on was, okay, we're not taking them there anymore because we don't want them to cause problems or hit somebody or hurt somebody or just be seen as this out-of-control child when really he isn't. And when he has the right environment, he's fine. And when he has the right skills to be able to handle those stimuli in those environments, that he is fine as well. So what we're advocating is, yes, understand what's going on, analyze the situations that your children are in, and then be able to build skills in your child to handle those situations so he doesn't resort to the inappropriate behavior. Right.
Right. And the other thing about resorting to, I mean, this is, as we say, it seems like, oh, well, the first time we did this and the second time we changed. No, we did our original way for a long time, I mean, for months, until we realize, no, that's not working. And then, so then we don't take him anywhere. And we don't take, we didn't take him anywhere for a very long time. And then we realize, no, that's not right either. Then we take him places and we keep having these repeated reports of he did this, he did that. It's always an inappropriate behavior. And then we realize, no, that's crushing his spirit. That is crushing his self-esteem. Why couldn't, from a child's perspective, I always get into trouble. Everywhere I go, I'm trouble. Everywhere I go, I get pulled into the hallway and I can't participate because I will do something that's inappropriate. And that's not a good message for the child either. So then in the end, I think you really need to identify what is it that your child can or cannot do. What are the skills that are missing? And what are the things in the environment that he doesn't deal well with that you can work on therapy on the side? You can work on the side, but meanwhile, in order for him to attend this event, one, he needs to have a schedule. He needs to know what he's doing. Two, no, he cannot sit idle. You need to speak with a caregiver, and hopefully they care enough to know that, okay, so these things may happen. In the case of these things happening, the child needs these additional support. You need to be able to come to the caregiver and let them know that, so they are equipped and they're prepared. You need to prepare your own child about what is going to happen. Well, you guys are all going to go to a cafe together and order your food. There's going to be some waiting time. What would you do while you wait and you're very bored? Oh, would you bring pencil to draw? Would you bring, what would you do? Would you bring music to listen to? What would you do when you're bored? You need to equip your child before you send them into that situation.
And I think it's important to understand this, and as a parent also, to be able to advocate for your child, because the other scenario is you do keep bringing your child to this without making any adjustments, without understanding what's going on, what these antecedent triggers are. And eventually, as we found out, they end up segregating your child, right, from the normal flow of what's going on at the event or class, or whether it be Sunday school, whatever it might be. And they tend to just push your child to the side and maybe let him color because he doesn't bother anybody. But that's not what you want either.
No, I mean, that is not.
We're advocating for these children to be able to participate. And in order for them to participate, you have to understand what's going on and be able to teach them the skills they need so that they can function in those situations as a full participant, not as somebody just sitting on the side. Because we had many situations where we saw that happen. It's like, oh, we're not getting those reports anymore. And then we go and sit in and peek in and see what's happening. And we realize, well, wait a minute, they put him on a table in the corner with a coloring book.
Way in the corner.
And he's not participating in the learning of the class anymore. So that's another very important point, I think, is that people have to be able to advocate for their child and teach your child how to advocate for himself and go in and understand what's happening, see these things and build these skills in your child so he can be an active participant at these events.
Yes, you need to remember from your child's perspective what the experience is for them. So the experiences that you don't want is when I show up, I'm trouble. When I show up, I do XYZ and they pull me out. When I show up, they call my parents. No, you don't want those experiences. You don't want those experiences, but you also don't want the experiences that says, yo, okay, well, when I show up, for whatever reason, I'm not like the rest of the children and I can't be like them and I can't, no, I don't sit with them. I sit in the corner.
Or worse than that, he knows that, okay, when he does this behavior, the consequence is he gets to go sit by himself in color, which to him may be an easier thing because he doesn't have the social skills and he's uncomfortable, but you don't want that. You want your child to deal with those social situations and learn the skills so that he can actively participate. You don't want him to be an outsider, right?
Right. In closing, is this really out of the blue? No, it's not out of the blue. And we want you to really learn to identify the antecedents. Really see what else what you can do to support your child. So to catch it before that behavior happens. So you don't let the behavior become a negative experience for your child.
Okay, so to kind of wrap up for this episode, as far as what we did and why it works. As we talked about, we went and studied what was going on, understood these antecedent events, what kind of triggers were there for these behaviors that we were seeing. We sat in the class, and from that, we were able to see these things and these triggers, and we worked with our child, our son, with these to build the skills for these, including using social stories that Louisa talked about a little bit earlier, sitting through some of the classes with him when these things came up, you know, say, okay, remember we talked about this. What should you be doing, right? To kind of coach him along and let him be an active participant, but kind of point him in the right direction. And also we got some support from the instructors in the class and explained to them what was going on, that he had these things going on, that there's these certain kind of triggers that are causing these, quote, out of the blue behaviors. And there were certain things that she could do or they could do. And we taught them some of these things to be looking for if some of these triggers happen, to go to our son and guide him again. Say, okay, well, you learned this to do when this happens. Let's practice it. Let's do it, so that he gets that skill building and builds that confidence that he needs to be able to do this on his own. And we've seen over weeks and weeks and weeks of this that he's improving. I mean, he's in situations, months now. But there are situations where he can go for certain periods of time and he does pull out his little, we call it his toolbox of what can I do when a certain thing happens. And he's more involved with these groups and able to participate. And we've starting to hear good reports back, right? Instead of the, oh, I know what your son did. It's like, you know, today he was participating and he was talking, and he was talking with another child, which is unusual. You know, so things like that, you start seeing this, and you have to be adamant about it. You have to work at it, and you have to build the skills with your child. It's not easy to do. Over time, it will work. And that's what we've seen, like in this particular example about these out of the blue behaviors. You can address them so they're no longer occurring, and the frequency gets down and down. Eventually, your child will build enough skills to be able to do this on his own.
Yeah, it doesn't go away right away. It's definitely a journey, and you really need to look at the from the perspective of, okay, within 1 week or within 1 month, how many of these occurrences have you had? And then several months down the road, after you're doing all these things, or even, then you look at it again. Yeah, has the frequency decreased? So don't get discouraged if you feel like, no, he's still doing these things out of the blue. Well, it's still going to be happening. The skills that are lacking are going to be lacking, but you want to be gradually moving. You want to celebrate each little success for each little thing that he did. You want to celebrate that, and you want to celebrate yourself.
And we'll have a series on that as well, right?
Oh, right.
We have a series on that. So anyway, so to wrap up our episode 2 in our series, is it this behavior really out of the blue? We found out that no, it is not. We talked about the antecedents today, how to identify those, what you do with those by building the skills with your child and working with those skills in your child, and the environmental factors that are causing some things, and some solutions to that. So in episode 3, we're going to cover what we call bringing you from chaos to harmony. We're going to look at two different paths. One is the chaos path and one is the harmonious path. And we're advocating for the harmonious path, which is seeing these antecedents and being proactive, building those skills in your child so that he can actively participate in these situations in a positive way. And the chaos path, which is basically you accept that these out of the blue behaviors happen and you're reactive to those behaviors, and maybe your consequences aren't right and you're reinforcing the behavior. So we're going to look at those two things in episode 3 of our series coming up next.
Thank you for listening to Harmonious Clan podcast series, Is This Behavior Really Out of the Blue? We illustrated the problem of out of the blue behaviors with a story from our own clan, discussed how to apply the ABCs of behavior, the outcome we saw, and why the solution works. And then we took a look at the path from chaos to harmony, contrasting the chaotic path, being reactive to the behavior, with the harmonious path, identifying the antecedents and being proactive. Harmonious Clan, enabling you to nurture your child from outcast to outstanding, and your clan from chaos to harmony. Please visit our website at www.harmoniousclan.com to get a copy of our podcast download, Understanding and Working with Behavior Issues Before They Start. You can also get the podcast notes, learn more about us, and get information about joining the clan. You've been listening to Harmonious Clan Podcast with Marco and Louisa. Learn more about Harmonious Clan at www.harmoniousclan.com for information on resources including books, educational podcasts, a supportive community, courses, and one-on-one consulting. Harmonious Clan, enabling you to nurture your child from outcast to outstanding, and your clan from chaos to harmony.